ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पश्चात्यदेशधारिणे
Very grateful, very honored to be with all of you today. Actually, I'm feeling extremely emotional to have been given the chance to participate in this very special event. I was born in Chicago in 1950 and spent my whole childhood living in America. As many of you may know, the 1960s was a very turbulent time in this country. When teenage people like me were really questioning the very fabric of the American society. The civil rights movement, the draft, the Vietnam War, there just seemed to be so many questions. At that time, I left my home at 19, seeking meaning, purpose in life, seeking to understand, is there unity in all the diversity of this world? Hate between religions, hate between races, discrimination. So myself and a friend, we went to Europe for a summer vacation. And I told my mother and father, I'll be back in time for the next semester of college in September. The first day we were in Europe, we got robbed and we had no money. And we really considered that a blessing. Now we really have to get to know the people to survive. So we hitchhiked all around Europe. And during that time, just coming in contact with so many different people from different backgrounds with different views, I was really trying to explore. And the counterculture, which I was a part of, which was kind of revolting against the apparent hypocrisy of the elder generation, I saw we have the same hypocrisy among ourselves, just a different dress and a different language. I heard the words of Gandhi, "Be the change you want to see in the world." Reverend Martin Luther King, who I was a follower of when I was a teenager, he said, if you do not have an ideal that you're ready to die for, you really have nothing meaningful to live for. I wanted to find that ideal. I wanted to somehow, in whatever small way I could be that change that Mahatma Gandhi was speaking about. And I felt that that required a spiritual transformation in myself. I decided to hitchhike to India. My friend thought I was crazy, so he didn't come. I hitchhiked from London through Europe and the Middle East, It took 6 months. Interestingly, in the 1950s and 60s, there wasn't many Indian people in America. When I finally reached the border of India, I met the first Indian person I ever had met in my life. I never even tasted a chili pepper before. I got to the border, and the border guard, just after I passed through a no man's land between Pakistan and India, asked the one question I never wanted to answer. Now, today we're getting so many incredibly intellectual questions and so many sociological, philosophical, economic, political questions, and all of the speakers are so eloquent in how they're responding. But I got a question. How much money do you have? I was prepared for any other type of question except that one. I had 26 cents in 5 different currencies. And the border guard said, "We have enough beggars in India. We do not want another one. You are rejected." I begged, I pleaded, but they wouldn't let me in. For 6 hours, I was sitting in that no man's land between Pakistan and India near Firozpur, trying to get in. They put their guns to my face and said, you're a nuisance, out, go back. Finally, around sunset time, the immigration guard changed. Now, this is just an outside table in a forest where the immigration was. And I went to this man who was probably the age of almost my grandfather. And I pleaded. He said, "My commanding officer has told me to reject you." I said, "I've hitchhiked through Europe, Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan. I've gotten so many diseases. I've almost been killed so many times. I'm yearning to meet the people of India. You're only the second Indian person I ever met in my life. I want to learn your culture, about your people." I actually cried. I said, "I'm begging you. I promise someday I will do something good for the people of India if you just give me a chance." He looked at me with those immigration agent eyes, examining my intentions, and then he put his hand on my head. He said, "Sometimes a man must follow his heart. I've been ordered to reject you, but I am going to give you the chance that you are crying for. Welcome to India." And he stamped my passport. When I got into India, it was just a bunch of fields and somewhere in Punjab. And I didn't know to go right or left. But I felt so at home. I felt like I was being embraced by my own mother. Later on, my spiritual teacher, Srila Prabhupada, he spoke something to a journalist in 1969 in London, England. He was challenged. "Why have you come from India to England?" Because he was a Swami. And Srila Prabhupada smiled. He said, "The British ruled over India for almost 200 years and took as many of the treasures of India as they could to England. But you forgot the most valuable treasure of India. Her culture, her spiritual culture. And I have come to bring to you for free what you forgot to take. I traveled to the Himalayas. I took the life of a sadhu, a simple ascetic. And I was studying so many various religions. And I studied Christianity. I was born in a Jewish family. I studied Judaism. I studied Islam in the Middle East. I was studying Buddhism and various sects of Hinduism. And after years, I finally went home to visit my mother and father. Can you imagine my poor mother and father? They were expecting me home after 3 months. And they didn't hear anything from me. I was just a teenager. 4.5 months later, they received an aerogram, which is a real cheap type of postal letter. And it said, I decided I want to see the world through the window of the people of the East. So I'm hitchhiking alone to India. I thought they'd be so proud of me. But I didn't understand. It was postmarked Iran with no return address. They were so helpless. They couldn't speak to me. They couldn't write to me. They couldn't communicate in any way. And later on, they got a letter from Afghanistan. And a couple months later, I really thought that they would think I was cool. I wrote saying that I was living in a cave in the Himalayan jungles. And I was studying the animals, like the leopards and the scorpions and the snakes. It broke their hearts. And when I finally came home years later, I was a hardcore, seasoned ascetic of a religion that they never even heard of what it was. But somehow or other, we communicated really nicely. And they accepted me and I accepted them for what we were, but they couldn't really appreciate until they came to India to see what I was doing. What I tried to explain to them and failed in every way, just by being in India with the people of India, completely transformed them. They were crying in happiness every day, embracing me, saying, I'm so proud. These are the most wonderful, cultured, beautiful people we've ever met in our lives. And they were very good socialites from Chicago. They knew a lot of people. They came many times. They loved India so much, the people. And they saw all the problems too. They saw the poverty, they saw the corruption, but there was something deep underlying in the people that had embraced the legacy and the culture of India that was so deeply impressive to them. When my mother passed away, 11 years ago, my father and all my brothers all decided, your mother was so proud of you, they said, and what you're doing in India. She wanted, and we have all agreed, that we'll do something that has never been done in the history of our family. We're going to cremate her and give you the ashes to bring to India. It was on the banks of the Ganga, the Ganges River. in a place called Mayapur, a holy place in Bengal. There was about 2,000 devotees of Krishna who were all chanting beautiful prayers because they all knew my mother. She had been there. And as they were offering their prayers, I submerged her ashes in the river Ganges. And I remember my thoughts. I was crying that the mother of my biological, physical birth is now uniting with the mother of my spiritual birth, Mother Ganges, Mother India. To me, that integration of the body, the mind, and our heart's aspirations was so meaningful, so significant. And today, I very much feel the same way. In the land of my birth, where I was raised, in one of the greatest, most influential institutions of education, MIT, I've been invited to participate in an event that is honoring India. I thank you for allowing me to be here. What was it about India that really transformed me? A prominent experience I had was its unity in diversity. Because traveling the world, I was so much accustomed to racial, religious, social restrictions. In India, it's very special. It's the origin of the Hindu religion, the Sikh religion, the Jain religion, the Buddhist religion, has the second largest population of the Islamic religion. It perhaps has the largest population of Zoroastrians or Parsis who, due to discrimination, came to India for shelter. India has one of the largest Christian populations. St. Thomas, the original apostle of Jesus, established Christianity in India almost 2,000 years ago, and it has flourished ever since. India has one of the oldest Jewish populations on planet Earth. And where Jews were oftentimes in their homelands in Europe and the Middle East were being persecuted and killed, they were given all facility and shelter in India. The Tibetan people, along with Dalai Lama, made their capital in India. The unity in the diversity is quite incredible. There has been Muslim presidents of India. There has been Sikh prime ministers of India. There's been women prime ministers of India. A Christian lady was the head of the ruling party for many years. It's very rare to find a country that actually is so open. Many of the most popular entertainers are Islamic. And by and large, there is really so much unity, although in such a massive population, there's also historically many problems. But what is that foundational cultural understanding that brings about such incredible unity and diversity in a place like India? I really wanted to study it and understand. And that's where I found the greatest wealth of my life. In universal principles of wisdom that can actually inspire us not to just tolerate our differences, but to respect and appreciate our differences. The basis of the Bhagavad Gita and so many of the other schools of thought in India is the science of understanding who am I. Because there's so many differences on the basis of mindsets and physical birth and appearances. But actually, who am I? In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells, Dehi no smin yatha dehi komaram yovanam chara, that the real person, the real you and me, is seeing through our eyes, hearing through our ears, tasting through our tongues, and observing the various changes of this body and mind. At one time, we were little embryos, and then we're babies. And our mind, we were very much eager for the milk from our mother. Now, what is the difference of our mind between now and then? And our bodies are completely different. There's a particular verse in the Bhagavad Gita, 5th chapter. When I heard it, in my exploration for truth and unity and universal concepts that can bring harmony to myself and the world, this verse struck me more than any other. May I share it with you? To me, it was the essence. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gabihastini suni chaiva supake cha pandita samadarshana. What is real wisdom? What is true knowledge? Obviously, at the universities and colleges throughout the world, we're getting a lot of technical knowledge. But what is that foundational knowledge that actually brings real meaning and inner prosperity to our life? It's the ability really interesting. MIT is like the capital of technology for the world, and the microphones taped down with duct tape, which doesn't work. So that's the way it was in India when I first got there. This verse tells that true knowledge is the ability to see every living being with equal vision, whether one is a high priest, whether one is a Hindu or a Muslim or a Jain or a Jew or a Christian or a Zoroastrian or a Buddhist or an agnostic or an atheist, whether one's black or white or male or female, whether one is rich or poor, whether one is a human or an elephant, or a cow, or a dog, or a cat. Wherever there's life, it is sacred. When we understand the sacredness within ourself, then we naturally, spontaneously, can appreciate the sacredness wherever life exists. This is the essence of all spirituality that in my search, my discovery. In the Bible it is said, what profiteth a person who gains the whole world but loses one's eternal soul? This is a universal principle. What is the difference between living body and dead body? It's consciousness, it's life. And all of these great spiritual traditions teach us there may be detailed differences, that we are a part of the one God, the one truth. And when we understand that within ourself, beyond our depressions, beyond our egos, beyond our longings and our frustrations, when we understand who we truly are, then we can recognize our true relationship with all living beings. To love God is not just a concept. It's expressed through compassion. And the larger the sphere of our compassion, the deeper our love grows for each other. I recently, just about 10 days ago, I was in Dubai. In fact, the hotel that I was on, we just saw a picture of it. I was told it's the only 7-star hotel in the world. Now, I used to live in caves, so it was kind of disorienting. It's really luxurious. And I was speaking in the Royal Ballroom to the leaders of the business community, many who are from Indian origin. And the ambassador of India introduced me. And I remember him saying, in this most luxurious hotel in the world, in the ballroom, Radhanath Swami is being asked to speak on simple living and high thinking. He said, I'm really wondering what he's going to say. And when I got up to the podium, even I was really wondering what I was going to say. But I expressed the simple truth that simple living, high thinking is not about being rich or poor. One could be a farmer with 2 acres of land. One could be a housewife. One could be a teacher. One could be a millionaire. One could be a billionaire. Or one could even be a swami. Simple living, high thinking is not about what we have or what our position is. It's about having a simple, well-wishing heart. Simple living, high thinking means whatever we have, whatever knowledge, whatever wealth, whatever influence, whatever skills, we utilize these things not with arrogance, not with envy, but with compassion. That is a simple heart. And in this way, we could all work together. Recently, there was this earthquake in Nepal. And we have our Bhaktivedanta Hospital. It's about a 200-bed hospital that we oversee just outside of Mumbai. And they sent so many of their doctors and everyone to Nepal. And monks were helping. And millionaires and billionaires were giving. Everyone was working together. Because there was a spirit of compassion for others. And that's really the unifying principle. That the Bhagavad Gita teaches that we are not the proprietors of what we have. We are the caretakers. Our family, our children, our employees, they are God's children. We are caretakers. And whatever property or abilities or money we have, we are caretakers. And especially our knowledge. We utilize what we have with a sense of true responsibility to each other. Is a knife good or bad? If a knife is in the hands of a thief, it will slash someone's throat to rob them. If that same knife's in the hands of a surgeon, it will save a person's life. Chemistry. I was recently in Europe and I visited one of the concentration camps of Nazi Germany. And the scientists were developing chemicals that would very effectively and efficiently murder millions of people, men, women, children. Another person in the same chemical laboratories as that, practically, with the same chemicals in a pharmaceutical laboratory, is creating cures for diseases. It's an extreme example. But with what we have, what is our values? There's a saying that if you lose your wealth, you lose nothing. If you lose your health, you lose something. If you lose your character, you lose everything. Most important principle of the legacy that we can pass down to the next generation. But we can't do that unless we embrace it in our own lives. Character. The basis of character is to do unto others as you would want them to do to you. To live with compassion. To see our relationship. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a beautiful verse. 5 minutes. Oh, okay. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. This means that the same one truth of knowing oneself and our relationship with nature, with God, with each other, it's the basis that comes to this world throughout history in different languages and different places. And one of the beautiful things I found about Indian culture is how open-hearted and easy it is to understand that unity in diversity. Humanity, compassion, is to earn with integrity and spend with compassion. Ananda Mayobhyashat, because everybody is ultimately looking for happiness. If we don't find happiness within ourselves, we can't really find it anywhere else. True happiness is within. Real knowledge is the science of finding that happiness, that peace within ourselves. And then through whatever our career may be, whatever we may have, we utilize that as an expression of the love and the kindness that we discover within ourselves. For thousands of years, people from all over the world have gone to India to find that hidden treasure that's actually within ourselves. And when we find it within ourselves, we can find it everywhere. It's really beautiful to see how India and the United States of America are uniting in such a nice way. In 1970, when I first arrived in India, there was a Cold War, and there wasn't much of a relationship at all. But now we see so much integration and so much sharing of wisdom and resources. And if we can somehow or other keep hold of that foundational culture, which is the basis not only of India, but of all true cultures of the world, to be connected to our true self, to be instruments of compassion with whatever we do, we could truly make a wonderful difference in the world. Thank you very much.